Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
He should be thinking of his children all the time. And if he knows anything at all, just to think of his children. You know, the children, they need their mom. And if he loves them that much, then he needs to understand that that's the one thing that he can do for them. Find their mom, get their mom back. If he knows anything, he needs to say it. And he's now a person of interest, so the police are going to be asking him questions. And I hope he understands that this is the most important thing, to find her, to find her.
Hello, and welcome to episode 30 of The Vanished. I would like to thank everyone for listening. I mentioned on Twitter and in the Facebook group earlier this week that I would be taking a little bit of time off next week to go on vacation with my kids. I am also working on a couple bigger projects for the show, so keep an eye out for them in the future. Tonight, I will be covering the disappearance of 38-year-old Vilette Torres. She disappeared from her home in Miramar, Florida on March 31st, 2012. Vilette was a loving, devoted mother of three. To truly understand this story, we have to go back many, many years. Vilette came to Florida from Nicaragua when she was just 15 years old. She attended the Miami Springs Senior High School and excelled at school. In her junior year, she started dating a classmate, Sid Torres. After she graduated, she attended the University of Miami and received several college scholarships. She continued to date Sid while attending the University of Miami. She graduated in 1997 with a degree in advertising. A year later, she married Sid. Just a few weeks after they got married, she learned that she was pregnant with their daughter, who was also named Vilette. Sid was a Marine, and the family moved to North Carolina when he was stationed there. He left the Marines about a year later, and the family moved back to Florida, where they lived with Vilette's family for some time. Her family remembers that the couple fought frequently during this time, and Sid would often end up sleeping in his car. Vilette was determined to make the marriage work because she had been so affected by her own parent separation when she was a child. When Vilette got a job, Sid would frequently show up at her workplace just to check up on her. She changed jobs and started selling insurance, so Sid decided to get a job at the same place to keep tabs on her. That employer said that she was excellent at her job, but Sid was not. Vilette had confided in this employer over the years, telling him how he treated her poorly, hit her, and sometimes choked her. He encouraged her to get a divorce on many occasions. In 2002, they purchased a home in the Harbor Lakes Estates community. This is where she met her best friend, Clarissa Garcia, and Vilette gave birth to their second child. Sid started a trucking business, and Vilette stayed home with the children and managed his business. Her friend Clarissa noticed the bruises on Vilette, but she would make excuses for Sid. She encouraged her to report the abuse to the police and get a restraining order, but she never did it because she was afraid that it would just make him more angry. The only police report regarding domestic violence in the home was filed in 2003. Vilette told the Miami-Dade police that she and Sid had gotten into a fight over a cell phone, and he had pushed her into a wall several times. No criminal charges were filed against him. Vilette gave birth to their third child in 2007. That same year, a woman from California called Vilette's mother and told her that she had been having an affair with Sid. She had met Sid when he was driving for his trucking company. She said that he immediately flirted with her and at one point told her that his wife was dead. There are emails that prove that this relationship existed and that he did tell this woman that his wife was dead. Vilette did not leave him after learning about this. She stuck with him because she loved him and for the sake of their children. Sid sold his trucking company, and Vilette's sister, Naiva, has stated that he bragged at a family gathering that he sold his truck for a lot of money because he told the guy that he had to sell his rig now because his wife had just died and he needed to bury her. In 2011, Vilette confided in a counselor from their church that Sid had pinned her down on a bed and hit her multiple times in the face. Sid apologized repeatedly to her and acknowledged to the counselor that he had physically abused her before on multiple occasions. In September of 2011, Sid hired a private investigator to follow Valette. He was convinced that she was cheating on him. In an email to the investigator, Sid said, "They are very desperate. They have not seen each other in 4 days. I think the big break is coming. I hope you guys are ready." He spent $900 on the private investigator, and they never found a shred of evidence that she was cheating. About 6 months before Valette vanished, Sid confided in a man who was also in the same church counseling group as the couple. He said that his marriage was over and that he wanted to kill a man that Valette was seeing. He spoke about getting an untraceable gun, hiring a killer, or staging a robbery. He asked this man to help him install cameras to track Valette's movements and made comments like, "If I can't have her, nobody will." In March of 2012, things were looking up for Valette. She had officially separated from Sid a few months before, things were going well at her job, and she had a new love interest. Around this same time, she confided in several people that she thought that Sid was stalking her and tracking her phone somehow. Her friend Clarissa urged her to go to the police and to stay at her parents' house, but Valette did not. March 18th was Valette's birthday. Sid sent her a text message that day which read, "No matter where you are or who you are with, I'll always be with you. You told me you were going to be home. You have a blessed B-day. I really wish I could be with you. Love you always, a stranger." On March 30th, 2012, Sid planned to take the children to Disneyland for the weekend. He changed his plans and told Valette that he would be taking them to spend the weekend at a hotel. He changed his plans again and took the children to see Clash of the Titans with his brother and then returned to spend the night at Valette's townhouse. He had not stayed at the townhouse since their separation months earlier. Valette had worked that day and went to her boyfriend's home until 4:30 a.m. on the 31st, when she decided to drive home. There are videos from toll plazas that show she was on her way home at that time. The community that she lived in was gated with a surveillance camera at the entrance. You can see on the footage that she entered the community at 5:17 a.m. At 5:19 a.m., her phone calls Sid's phone 2 times, but he denies receiving those calls. Those calls were the last calls that were ever made on her phone, and she is not seen leaving the community on the surveillance videos. The 3 children had slept in Valette's bed that night. Her daughter reported that she had heard what sounded like howling coming from her brother's bedroom during the early morning hours. She heard crying and someone say, "No, you wake up," and then another more quiet howling sound. She went to her room and closed the door, and then later went back into her mother's room, where she again heard crying until she fell asleep. She did not get up again until noon on Saturday. The same surveillance video that recorded Valette arriving at the gated community recorded Sid leaving the next morning in his Jaguar at 10:52 a.m. He went with his 2 young sons to pick up his brother, Douglas. They were going to go watch a baseball game that Douglas's son was playing in. They never made it to the game because supposedly they were too late. One interesting fact to note is that Sid's cell phone was turned off for most of the day on the 31st. Valette disappeared shortly after 5 a.m. on Saturday, and Sid did not call the police until Monday.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah. All right. Phil Miramar, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Hey, listen, it's missing.
It's missing?
Yeah.
How long?
I wouldn't tell. Don't know. Saturday she was in here. All right. And Friday, matter of fact, yeah, Saturday morning or Friday night, she didn't come to sleep. And then I don't know about Saturday. And now Sunday, I definitely did it. So.
You did what?
I mean, it was 1 o'clock and she didn't show up either.
Okay, so she's been missing since Friday?
I guess.
You all live together? You just got by the house?
Yeah.
Okay. Your name?
Sorry?
Your name? Name?
Villette. V-I-L-E-T.
You say D-I-L-E?
V as in Victor, I as in India, L-I, Villet. V-I-L-E-T.
What's her last name?
Torres with a Z at the end.
How old is she?
37.
White, black, black?
I'm sorry?
What is she, white, black?
Hispanic.
How tall is she?
About 5'5".
How much she weigh?
About 120 pounds.
Any marks, tattoos, or bruises, or anything?
No.
You know what she was last name wearing?
I'm sorry?
You know what the last type of clothing she had on? What was she wearing last time you seen her?
No, that's the thing. On Friday, and supposedly she was going to go to work, but I don't know what happened from there. Friday, I went out, you know, we came back at nighttime, at midnight, and she never came back. We called, or she didn't answer. And then I left Saturday, and then Sunday, she didn't show up yesterday either.
You tried calling her and everything?
We tried calling her.
No answer?
My daughter called too. I sent her a couple of text messages, but
Was it, did you, when you went home, did you see any cell phone ringing or anything? Was it in the house or anything?
No, nothing whatsoever. I called the mother, and the mother said that she's not there either. Friday night when we came back home, all right, her car, her personal car was not there, and her company car was parked right in the driveway.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And now today?
Saturday, obviously, Saturday morning, all right? Now her car was still not there.
Okay.
Saturday afternoon, Saturday afternoon, we left. I think we left there from 11. At 11, her car was there, and her company car was there. So both cars were there.
So what about now? Are both cars there now?
Both cars are still there.
Does the little actually take anything with her?
That's what I was going to tell you right now, man. There's that both of her purses are there in the house. But there's no cell phones and there's no, her personal wallet with all her information.
Is that the house?
Yeah, no, it's not in the house.
All right, we'll get someone over there, okay? This is the house, right?
Right now, I was on my way to work, but then I'm going to go back, okay? So, because I'm not in the house right now.
Okay, how long is it going to take you to get back over there?
Oh, shit. It's going to take me about 20 minutes, 30 minutes.
Because I already put the call in, so.
Shit, I'm going to be, I'm on Sterling right now, and I'm going back, all right?
All right, we got him on the way now, though.
All right, Mr. Tech, you got my cell phone, right? Yeah.
All right, we're on the way, though.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
I apologize for the audio quality of that clip. I attempted to clean it up, but it ended up distorting the audio. Most people believe that this statement is the most important part of the call. Was this some kind of slip?
No, Sunday I definitely did it. So
you did what?
I mean, it was 1 o'clock and she didn't show up either.
Several bodies of water in the area were searched by dive teams, but not a single trace of Villette was found. On April 4th, a K-9 team was brought in, and the dog immediately went to the front door of the home, but did not give the trained final response. The officer handling the dog believes that this meant the dog picked up the odor of decomposition. In August, which was about 6 months after she disappeared, detectives tracked down his car, which had since been sold 2 times, and a cadaver dog detected the odor of decomposition in the trunk and the back seat. Sid's attorney believes that this evidence should not be admissible in court because there is a chain of custody issue due to the fact that the car had since been sold and used by someone else. Remember I mentioned earlier in the show that Villette thought that Sid was stalking her and somehow tracking her phone? Well, as it turns out, he was and had been since August 9th, 2011, when he purchased the software online for $100. This had given him the ability to track her via GPS, listen to her calls, read text messages, view pictures, and even turn on the recording feature on her phone so he could hear what was going on wherever she was. He had even bragged to his friends about this and showed them how it worked. After Valette's disappearance, an anonymous call was made to social services regarding the welfare of the children, and they were taken from Sid and placed with Valette's family. Sid was only allowed to have supervised visitation. Her family has stated that Valette had not wanted the kids to be around Sid because he was too much of a disciplinarian. She would often have her mother watch them on the weekend while she worked instead of sending them with Sid because of this.
Sid Torres has been allowed one supervised visit a week with his three children.
I want to ask the court to consider liberalizing the visitation. It's a supervised visitation.
I also want the father to have an increase in his visitation.
For now, his children will remain with the family of his estranged wife. Valette Torres has been missing since March 30th. When her brother Javier Blanco introduced himself in court today, he made it perfectly clear what he thinks happened.
Javier Blanco, brother to the murdered victim.
Then outside the courtroom.
I think he killed her. I think he choked her.
I don't know where he's getting that information from. I've been speaking to the Miramar Police Department. They're keeping a very tight lid on any evidence that they do have. As you can see, my client hasn't been arrested.
Sid Torres is petitioning the court to regain custody of his children. The state is petitioning to keep them with their mother's family. A dependency trial date has been set for May 29th. Valette's father, asked what he would say to Sid, replied, "Don't be an imbecile. Say what you did."
The Blanco family has never really liked Sid Torres. And so it's not surprising to him that they are turning their frustration at him. But he knows he didn't have anything to do with her disappearance. And we're fighting forward. We're fighting to get the children back.
The attorney for Children's Legal Services told me she will have to present a witness who will say specifically why the children might be at risk if they're returned to their father. Meanwhile, Sid Torres remains a person of interest in the Miramar police investigation.
Just a few weeks later, the children were returned to Sid, which was very upsetting for Valette's family.
The missing Miramar mother's children spent the first part of their Memorial Day weekend packing, but not for a three-day trip. The Department of Children and Families has voluntarily dismissed a dependency hearing, which could mean the children will be returning to their father soon.
They don't want to go. They want to stay here.
What a difference a year makes. Valette Torres' sister, Naiva, remembers this time last year.
We were probably thinking of going somewhere, planning something, spending it with family, you know, and we had my sister here, which was the most important thing. Now we don't have her.
It's been nearly 2 months since Valette disappeared.
This is not a matter of a couple that's divorcing and we're fighting custody. This is a criminal case. This is an investigation. It's still going on. He's still being looked at. You know, nothing has cleared him.
Sid Torres' attorney released a statement saying Sid has had a tough struggle since his wife Valette disappeared nearly 2 months ago. He's extremely grateful that he will now be happily reunited with his children. The three kids were temporarily put into the custody of their maternal grandparents after someone made a confidential call to the Florida Abuse Hotline, fearing he would be a threat to himself and the children.
I really don't feel he's stable enough to take care of these lives. Even if he didn't do anything at this point, really, I don't think he's in a stable state, in a stable mindset.
The family expected to attend a dependency hearing this Tuesday. They say they were blindsided by the decision, but won't stop fighting for the children or searching for their mother.
It's just very sad because they are defenseless now. They don't have their mother. Who is going to be there to defend them now?
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on. But when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's zocdoc.com/vanished. Zocdoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. On November 21st, 2012, a grand jury indicted Sid Torres for the murder of Villette. The children were again placed with Villette's family. In 2014, multiple charges of unlawful interception of electronic communication were added for the software that he installed on Villette's phone. The private investigator that he had hired had warned him not to use this software because it can be illegal. When a search of Sid's parents' house was conducted, they found a jump drive with a folder called Devil Dog. The folder had call logs, emails, and text messages from Villette's work cell phone. Sid had started dating a woman shortly before he was charged. In an interview with NBC, she spoke about a conversation she had with Sid.
We were sitting and talking, and he said, you know, my wife is missing. You know, she's disappeared. You know, we were sitting in the car, and, you know, he was staring at me like he usually does. And then he told me, he says, "Are you sure you want to continue with this relationship?" He says, "I can be dangerous." And that was like, "What do you mean dangerous?" And he goes, I can be a dangerous man."
She also helped the police investigation by recording some phone calls that she had with Sid for the police. Sid is currently awaiting trial. Obviously, I do believe that Sid is guilty. I wanted to share this story because domestic violence is such a huge problem. I think that he either planned the whole thing out way in advance and acted like he was going to take the kids away only to surprise her when she came home. Or he was monitoring her phone that day and became so angry because of something that he heard or read and decided to kill her. His statements to several people leading up to her disappearance are very damning. It is also possible that she came home and they got into a fight and he took it way too far, although I find that to be the least likely scenario. Every time I think about this case, I think if only Villette had not gone inside that morning and instead went to her parents' house or her friend down the street or back to her boyfriend's house or called the police. I don't want to come off as victim blaming because obviously it is absolutely not her fault, but had she done one of those things, maybe she would still be here today. The crime scene photos that have been released include several pictures of his car. They show that he had a spare tire on at the time. There are also some pictures of damage to other tires and some pavers that were in Villette's yard. The pavers were being used around a flower bed. It appears that the investigators believe that the damage to the tires was caused by the pavers. Possibly Sid was backing up as close as he could to one of the doors and his tire hit the pavers. Crime scene photos also show that there were rubber gloves and rolls of tape in Sid's vehicle. There's one thing that I keep thinking about and I can't get it off my mind. We know that Sid left home that morning with his two young sons. Was their mother in the trunk? Did he take the kids with him to dump her body? I can't completely explain why, but I find that idea to be so very, very upsetting. I spoke with a listener, Kate, for this episode. She volunteers at a battered women's shelter and outreach program. She has an educational background in family violence. I sent her some information on the case before we spoke so that I could get her thoughts on some aspects of it. When you look at a case such as this one, it's really easy to wonder, why did she stay so long? Why did she go in the house that night?
Yeah, a lot of it goes to like the devil you know is better than the devil that you don't know. You think you've handled it for so long that you know their ins and outs and you know their limits and you can take care of yourself. you know, that happens a lot too. It's pretty typical. So no, it, I mean, it's pretty typical. And I saw on the link that you gave me, you know, she had told her friends that he is abusive, that, you know, there might've been some rumors of physical violence and that she was going to leave him, but it took a long time for her to get out. And that's also very typical too. So I'm hoping that people can see, like, there's reasons why people don't leave.
The U.S. Department of Justice estimates that only 25% of physical assaults perpetrated against women are reported to police annually.
That gets to the point, too. They don't want to press charges because they're worried, well, what's going to happen now to me? You know, maybe we'll hold them for 24, 48 hours, but they're going to come back. I don't want them to get in trouble because at the end of the day, she does love him. That doesn't change the fact that she loves him. You know, she still has at least some sort of emotional attachment to him, doesn't want him to get in trouble. That's also a big part of why people stay in that relationship too. And there's also, you know, since they're living together and they have kids together, there's financial issues. I don't know if I can do it by myself.
I had heard of people using apps like the one that Sid put on Valette's phone, but I had only heard of people using them to track their children or teenagers, which at the time when I heard that, I didn't think it was such a bad thing. After hearing this story, it's actually kind of frightening that someone could put that on your phone and you would have no way of knowing. It seems like nowadays, legislators just cannot keep up with how quickly our technology changes.
And at this time, too, that stuff is pretty recent, pretty new. So yeah, 2011, we would still be aware that there were some apps and things like that out there. But I think it's only been recently, too, that even like with the project that I work on, that we talk about things like sexting, digital violence, digital abuse, and how stalking has to be a part of that. And I don't even think right now that's written into the judicial system as part of stalking. I teach it to the kiddos, but I don't think that's really well enforced in terms of the justice system.
I pulled the probable cause affidavit for the charges relating to the phone, and he wasn't charged because it was a crime against his wife. He was charged because it was a crime against the company she worked for. Sid did not have the right to download any software, and because he downloaded tracking software, he then had access to confidential company information.
Okay, so some sort of like cyber crime, that's what it sounds like, rather than stalking or a personal attack. That's not too surprising. The laws really haven't caught up with the digital violence. But it's interesting, that sounds more just like an invasion of privacy, you know, or something like that, or a cyber crime rather than a violent crime, you know, whereas stalking is still considered abuse, you know, a violent crime against another person.
When leaving an abusive relationship, women are 70 times more likely to be killed in the 2 weeks after leaving than any other time during the relationship. I asked Kate to explain this dynamic a little bit better for us.
Well, in the, you know, when we think about the whole cycle going, when they're leaving, they're creating an unbalance of that power and control. They're taking the power and control into their hands, and they're taking their own life. You know, they're taking power and control in their own hands for themselves and taking direction. And that puts the other people at a loss of sense of their selves. The abuser loss of sense of their selves. They're losing the person that they have that power and control over. So they're going to do whatever bizarre thing that they can or extreme thing they can to regain that power and control. Which could be like, you know, what we find in this case could even lead to that stalking and bragging to friends and, saying threatening things, plotting horrible things. You know, they lost something that they had control over, in this case, for 15 years, and they're wanting to regain that back. So that's why it would be a dangerous time for them. And they're going to feel vulnerable, too, because the person that's been abused or has been through that cycle, you know, this is new for them too. So they're going to be vulnerable at that point, which is why it's very important that they have the support they need, whether that's, you know, hopefully counseling, a safe place where they're protected, maybe, you know, spending time with a friend or a family member that they trust, and especially in these sort of cases. And that's also another reason why it's so hard for people to leave, because that part is scary. There's no two ways about it. It's scary, but it's important for people to know that they have the support and there are resources out there to help.
One of the things that I found to be so shocking about this case was the amount of people that knew what was going on. I know that Vallette's friends and family only had so much control over the situation. But Sid was talking to other people about murdering someone, whether it be her or her boyfriend. You would think that somebody would have thought that it would have been a good idea to contact the police.
There's a lot of things, too, when it comes to abuse, whether it's the victim or the perpetrator, with it that it's none of their business. You know, they don't want to get involved. And that's very typical with bystanders. You have to definitely pick up the warning signs. You know, we discussed that there were several friends that they talked to, and the boss knew about these things. A lot of people just ignore it, won't do anything. I think a big part of it is you got to understand that when you're a bystander, you have an option to act in some way, whether or not that's somebody to confide in, go get somebody else that can help. You know, if you're not going to talk to the police, I'll talk to them with you. Why don't we go together to the shelter? How about you stay with me for some time? Give them resources and options on how to leave and feel safe, because they're not going to be able to do it on their own. They don't have anything. If it's one thing to say you have to leave, but how is that implemented? What are my resources? So I think providing them a safe place to go, telling them you'll go with them, giving them options is really, it gives them more direction on how to get out. And also respecting that they might not want to leave for a variety of different reasons. It might take time, and they have to understand that, that it's not okay, because they'll accept a lot of excuses to a certain point too. They'll make up strange things like, well, he loves me in these instances. Maybe it's not as bad as I'm thinking. So talking candidly and letting them know, you know, you have options. It does not have to be this way. You know, do you want him to do X, Y, Z things? And if the answer is no, then let's fix this. Let's do something about it. Let's get you out of there. But the number one thing, if you're a bystander and if it's somebody that you know, that your safety is number one. So we're not going in all rogue with somebody or putting yourself in danger, just giving them resources for the hotline, maybe, if you feel like that's better and they can't come stay with you. Just not accepting their excuses with it and trying to face the truth of what's going on, labeling the behaviors as they are in reality. A lot of times too, is telling them to take their own advice. People that have been through abusive relationships and been through rocky roads are really good at telling the other people advice, and then they don't take it themselves. So, you know, encouraging your friend, hey, you know, you got me through this really hard time and you told me these are my options. I'm doing the same for you now. Let's take your own advice and let's get you out of there.
I know from experience that trying to help someone get out of an abusive relationship can be very frustrating. I had tried really hard to help a friend in the past, and she just went right back to the same person over and over again.
And I think the big part is to understand with domestic violence is that it's a cycle of violence. It's going to go through those phases. Maybe you got them out right at the explosion or right when things were being tense, were tensing up to the explosion of abuse. You got them out at that time, but you know what? Here comes the abuser right around the corner at the honeymoon phase saying, I'm going to change and things are going to be different this time, or whatever excuse it is that they're making, and they're going to get back together. On average, what we know from statistics is that someone in an abusive relationship will go back to their partner 7 times before finally leaving. And that's just on average. So what we know about statistics, it's, you know, there's some people that get to the tension building phase of abuse with an abuser and they're like, I'm out. I not want to be part of this. And so they don't even get a full cycle. And then there's some that stay for 20 cycles of this on again, off again situation. So it's very typical for them to return to the abuser. That's not uncommon. We just got to be aware that that's a possibility and how we're going to support them to get out if it were to happen, they were to come back again. And I think having that consistency is really important, because if somebody's in that abusive relationship, they're afraid of them. They might, you know, have lost some independence, have lost their sense of self, and they don't really know who they are without their abuser. Especially in this case where it's been 15 years, that's a very long time to be with the same person who might be doing not just physical or emotional abuse as well. You know, making them feel bad about themselves, making them lose a sense of self. And that's really hard once you're away from that. where do you go? What do you do? What do you think about yourself? That's why counseling at that point is so important. And to your point too, it is frustrating when you see this repeated pattern of somebody taking advantage or somebody abusing or somebody stacking a friend or a loved one of yours, because we do. We're like, that person is terrible and we want them gone and you need to get out of there. And it's hard because many times that victim, they still say or feel or think that they love them. They have a desire to stay in the relationship. They're embarrassed that it got to this point sometimes. You know, they're protecting that abuser. There's that financial stability. This is somebody that they know, so they're afraid, hey, you know, I made it this far. It's not that bad. But I mean, the worst case is for a bystander to do nothing. You know, even if you don't feel comfortable confronting the friend, you know, talking to the hotline and making a safety plan, you know, getting some resources together, you know, maybe talking to another one of their loved ones and saying, how can we help together? Just being a team at it really helps. I mean, there's a lot of reasons too why bystanders will do nothing. A lot of times they're afraid to say that that person doesn't have a problem with it. So why should I have a problem with it? And that's really common too. But just because on the outside they're saying that they're okay with it, if you don't think the behavior is okay, and it's not just of a personal issue, if you're seeing that it's abusive and they're controlling, they might just not be telling you that they have a problem with it, or they might not understand that it's not okay. So they need to understand that, or, you know, help them understand that they have options outside of that relationship.
We know that Villette was being stalked by her estranged husband, Sid. We may never know the full extent of what was happening, but here's a little bit more information about stalking.
The definition of stalking can be a little gray for some people. How it's defined generally is that it's a pattern of repeated threatening or harassing behaviors that directly or indirectly communicate a threat or place the victim in fear. So that's not if the person or the perpetrator think that they're stalking. It's if the victim themselves say, hey, this has been going on for some time and I'm not comfortable with it. So that's something really good to know too. And when it comes to stalking itself, a lot of people don't really know too much about that. And it's actually a lot more prevalent than what people think. From the statistics we know, which a lot of time is based on self-reporting. So it's good to know when you hear statistics about this that it can definitely be larger than what we're presenting. But latest statistics say about 1 in 12 women and 1 in 45 men will be stalked in their lifetime. And that more than 1 million women and nearly 500,000 men are stalked each year. So that's quite a large margin or a large amount of people that go through this. And it's good to know some of the warning signs of somebody that's in, you know, might be saying that someone's checking on their phone, having to check in a lot, saying they see somebody around all the time when they're out somewhere, that they just happen to be where they are all the time. They might not label it as stalking because the definition of it is so vague and so open. But it's good to know that these are some of the warning signs and that it does happen quite often.
I asked Kate to give us some resources for anyone out there who may be going through this themselves or know someone else who is.
Well, there is a hotline just nationally. It's 1-800-799-7233. So 1-800-799-SAFE, 1-800-799-7233. So that's the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence hotline. So that'll get you resources. You know, you can talk to somebody and they can find somebody local for you. What I say too is there's all over the place, there are local resources. I'm lucky that I live in a location where there's some really great places that will help, you know, when you're ready, get you out where you need to go. And it's also a great resource if you think of a friend that might be in that situation, you need to talk to somebody to get a game plan, a safety plan on how you're going to help your friend get out of the situation. So I would check out the hotline there and take a look in your neighborhood, in your county. There's resources out there. most of them have some sort of website. A lot of times, too, they even have on their website some sort of safety exit for you. So if you're nervous about going online, they generally have something to shut it off really quickly for you, too. Some of them even now are using a chat option, which is pretty great. So if you wanted to get an email or get a chat from your local battered women's shelter or rape crisis center, those are all available, too.
One last thing that I wanted to know from Kate was, after she reviewed the case, did she think that this was a planned murder or did he just snap?
I rarely think, and I know there's like that show called Snapped, and that kind of drives me a little nutty because I don't really think people just snap. It's a pattern of behavior, of learned trust and acceptance. It goes through that cycle of patterns and buildup. They understand people's moves. They're, especially after 15 years of being together, something like that, they're going to understand their body language, how they handle things. It's going to be something that's planned out. It's not just going to be one day they snap and then they're going to do it. It's a continuum, if you will.
If you have any information about the disappearance of Valette Torres, please call the Miramar Police Department at 954-431-4600. This case isn't so much of a mystery as some of the others, but it's still important because it highlights the epidemic of domestic violence, and also, Valette's family deserves to be able to bury her and have some closure. Her children didn't just lose one parent that night, they lost two. That brings us to the end of this episode. I would like to thank everyone for listening and Kate for taking the time to speak with me. I will have a couple short clips from our conversation at the end of the show as well. I would also like to thank everyone who has contributed to the show on Patreon. It really does help to defray some of the production costs. If you would like to contribute, you can do that on patreon.com/thevanishedpodcast. If you would like to submit a topic suggestion, there is a form on thevanishedpodcast.com. I am on Twitter @TheVanishedPod. There is a Facebook page and a private group. If you have trouble finding the group, just reach out to me and I will send you a link. We discuss a lot of interesting topics there. I will catch up with everybody once I get back from vacation at the end of next week.
Any little decision, like where are we going to have the birthday party? I mean, she couldn't even call us without him getting upset because I'm your man. I'm the one you're supposed to call. It was just too much. He wanted her to stop working and become a stay-at-home mom, even though she had been a stay-at-home mom for a long time. And she was, for the first time, very, very happy at her job.
I think the big thing is, you know, if anyone has any sort of feeling like they relate to this in some way, or they know a friend that relates to the story in some way, to know that there are resources and that the abuse is not deserved and there's ways that they can get out and they can get help. I mean, the reason I do what I'm doing and why I, you know, do extra hours because I have my job and then I, you know, volunteer on the side and I am an advocate on the side. So I do a lot of the outreach, like with teenagers and things like that. All just because I feel really passionate about it is I grew up in a violent household. Like my mother took a very long time to get out of her relationship. And a lot of it too, she didn't label herself as a victim at that time. And I think it took a lot to really say that, you know what, this relationship was not okay. You know, I'm not happy here and I deserve something different. You know, I'm worth it to leave.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.